Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Who is there for heroes of the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who: the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families. The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year. Dozens of golf outings. And the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is educating kids kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep its vow to never forget. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at, like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Earlier today in Jerusalem, President Biden put Iran on notice about its nuclear ambitions during a joint news conference with Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid. But despite the tough talk, the president is simultaneously trying to revive the Obama-era nuclear deal that has caused a lot of friction with America's closest ally, Israel. So what else will unfold during Biden's Middle East trip? I'll discuss in tonight's Hold the Line.
We mean what we say. Is we mean what we say. They have an opportunity to accept this agreement that's been laid down. If they don't, we made it absolutely clear. We will not, let me say it again, we will not allow Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon.
Welcome to Hold the Line. I'm Buck Sexton. Joe Biden saying in no uncertain terms there that a nuclear Iran is a totally unacceptable state. But what does that mean? What is this Biden regime that has really set new records of incompetence, that has no political capital to spend even among Democrat voters these days, that is completely plummeting in the polls, that has shown no capability at home or abroad to improve on anything? How seriously will the mullahs take Biden's word on this? Do they listen to the words of a commander-in-chief who seems too old, who seems feeble, who seems befuddled and foggy at far too many times? Do they hear that and say, yeah, you know, we're going to change our policies here. We're going to divert away from what seems to be a serious effort here to reach full nuclear breakout capability? Well, the Israeli Prime Minister Lapid told Biden to get tougher on Iran because he's like, look, words alone aren't going to be enough.
Words will not stop them, Mr. President. Diplomacy will not stop them. The only thing that will stop Iran is knowing that if they continue to develop their nuclear program, the free world will use force. The only way to stop them is to put a credible military threat on the table. You have said many times, Mr. President, that big countries do not bluff. I completely agree. It should not be a bluff, but the real thing. The Iranian regime must know that if they continue to deceive the world, they will pay a heavy price.
That price, it seems, would be, at a minimum, military airstrike against Iranian facilities if they continue down this pathway, because economic pressure may not be enough. The U.S. and Israel did put out this joint declaration. The United States stresses that integral to this pledge is the commitment never to allow Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon, and that it is prepared to use all elements of its national power to ensure that outcome. Again, words that seem strong on this issue, but not particularly specific. And that then leads us to why Joe Biden is, on the issue of foreign policy, a president that nobody can really put stock in. You'll recall that in 2008, when Barack Obama was the Democrat nominee, Joe Biden was a third-tier candidate in that election. He got a very small percentage of the actual vote and was generally a joke alongside people like Dennis Kucinich. But he was added to the Obama ticket specifically. Joe Biden was added specifically because of his foreign policy acumen, right? The ability that Joe Biden would bring to the Obama White House to understand the complex foreign policy issues of the day. And then you can fast forward in your head through 8 years of an Obama regime that was, on the foreign policy side, a total disaster. You had the Syrian civil war breakout. Obama kept saying that we would lead on that issue and we would stop the violence. Well, more than 500,000 people died in that conflict. It also coincided with the rise of the Islamic State, which happened after Obama pulled troops out of Iraq, and all of a sudden we had a security vacuum in that country, a sudden security vacuum that was filled by ISIS lunatics who managed to seize control of a large portion of that country and a few million people who fell under the reign of that terror regime. The toppling of the Gaddafi government in Libya, led by people like Hillary Clinton, Obama's then Secretary of State, and then eventually we all know what happened in the Benghazi debacle. But you look across the board, whether it's Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Libya, Syria, China policy, and for 8 years, while Biden was one of the primary voices and supposedly one of the main architects of the Obama administration's foreign policy, it all was a mess. It just showed a total lack of strategic thinking and understanding. And so why would we believe anything would be better now that Biden, and not Obama, is running the show, is the commander-in-chief? We know that there was this deeply flawed Iran deal signed by the Obama administration, in which it was pretty clear that Obama mortgaged, if you will, sold out the rest of his foreign policy goals in the Middle East. No peace process progress, for example, not even the start of a failed peace process under the Obama administration. But it was also to get this Iran deal. But the Iran deal just allowed for Iran to get a lot wealthier and to integrate itself into the global financial community and not have to actually submit itself to the full-scale across-the-board inspections of everything, including military facilities. And never really eliminated its ability to get to that eventual breakout range. Didn't stop the Iran deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, they called it, didn't stop them from developing ballistic missile capability. It didn't deal with Iranian support for terrorist groups all across the region. And so the Trump administration came in and said, this is nonsense. We're just going to put a lot of pressure on Iran again that they stop this crap. Now the Biden administration's in office and they're trying to get a nuclear deal. And here's Biden just this week saying they won't wait forever for that deal. Watch.
We've laid out for the people, for the leadership of Iran, what we're willing to accept in order to get back in the JCPOA. We're waiting for the response. When that will come, I'm not certain. But we are not going to wait forever.
not going to wait forever. Or what? I mean, you can almost imagine the mullahs asking that question out loud. What exactly is Joe Biden going to do? What evidence is there that Joe Biden is a force to be reckoned with as a foreign policy mind and as commander-in-chief now of the United States? Not much, right? Not much of anything. It's pretty shocking when you see this continue to play out. Joe Biden, it's reckless that he has done so much damage to our economy and has been so incompetent as president, forcing mask and vaccine mandates on people, all this idiocy. But when you see the global issues that Biden is actually facing, we already have a war in Europe that seems to have no end in sight. The Biden administration has deeply mismanaged that. And now we have the possibility of a nuclear Iran on Biden's watch, and maybe a Chinese invasion of Taiwan too. All these things could happen. And if you're our enemies, if you're the bad guys, what better time than now, while you have the confused, doddering fool Joe Biden in the White House? We'll have more on his trip to the Middle East with former White House Deputy National Security Advisor Steve Yates coming up. But first, let's talk about the newest sponsor to Hold the Line, Off Grid Panama. A lot of you are worried about the reported food shortages and power outages headed our way, and you're not alone. If you look at the skyrocketing cost of energy and food prices going through the roof, we're certainly heading in the wrong direction. Many are choosing to go off grid. When you think of going off grid, you think of living in the mountains somewhere away from civilization, right? But there's actually a safe option for going totally off grid in Panama, Central America. A modern home starts at only $100,000. These homes are fully set up on a self-sustaining farm with all of your needs met right on the property. Panama offers a stable government, cost-effective, high-quality medical care, and a fantastic climate. There are only 24 homes being offered in the community, so reach out to them quickly at offgridpanama.com or call them now at 904-236-4737. Again, that's offgridpanama.com or 904-236-4737. Be patient, leave a message. We think this is going to sell out quickly. They'll call everyone back, though, within 24 hours. We'll be right back with more. Hold the Line. While on his Middle East trip, President Biden is trying to reassure leaders that two things can be true at the same time. The United States can pursue a new nuclear deal with Iran and can also use military force as a last resort to prevent Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons. So, which is it? Let's ask senior fellow of the America First Policy Institute and former White House Deputy National Security Advisor, Steve Yates. Steve, good to see you.
Good to see you, Buck. Thank you.
Let's start with the Iran equation here. There were some moments, for example, when Biden was in Israel, where he said just earlier this week, the U.S. will use force as a last resort. Watch this one.
In the past said you'll do anything, and you say it again, that you'll ensure Iran would not acquire nuclear weapons. Does that also mean, sir, that you would use force against Iran? Is that what that means?
If needed? That was the last resort, yes.
Mm-hmm. So do you think, one, he means that, and two, how worried are you we're going to get to that point?
Well, it's something that should concern everyone if we should get to that kind of a point. I mean, we've, as a nation, had somewhat of our fill of protracted and dangerous wars in the broader Middle East, and that certainly would be quite a dramatic development. I think we have to take a step back when President Biden is speaking. I wish it weren't so, but we never quite know when the president declares a policy, whether he's actually setting it or whether a member of his staff is going to call for a cleanup on aisle four and try to say this is what the president meant. But in the broader Middle East, as you know very well, these words will carry a lot of weight and will reverberate. And really, if he was serious about trying to avoid that outcome, he would have embraced rather than somewhat marginalized the Abraham Accords, and he would have embraced the maximum pressure policy rather than going back to the tried and true appeasement, which has led to this potential nuclear breakout.
And also, just can you tell everybody, Stephen, what is going on with regard to the Iranian nuclear program right now? There was a headline a couple of days ago, I think it was from Reuters, that at Fordow, the Iranians have enriched uranium again. They have or are enriching it again, taking it up to 20%. They've got new and their best centrifuges spinning in a highly fortified facility. So what's going on there?
Well, even the Biden administration's top envoy was somewhat sadly admitting that the Iranians are much closer to a breakout point in the year and a half of the Biden administration than they were before under the maximum pressure policies of the previous administration. It used to be there were estimates of weeks or months for them to be able to reach the dangerous threshold, but they're now enriching uranium up to a percentage point where experts say it could be really just a matter of a day or two, the equivalent of flipping a switch. That's pretty shocking. And that was coming from a negotiator that has already tried to give them all kinds of benefits to induce them back into an agreement.
I mean, Stephen, is this going to a place where, you know, up to this point, there's been this sense of status quo means Iran could go toward a nuclear weapon at some point. There's going to be a lot of negotiation, but it's not necessarily going to happen. Are we heading toward Iran's getting the nukes, or Iran's going to suffer through massive airstrikes to stop them from getting the nukes? I mean, are we on? Is that the trajectory right now, or is the third way still possible?
Well, I think that there are some alternatives that are possible. And first and foremost, I think the biggest mistake would be for the president or anyone else to lead us into a one-on-one situation with Iran. We have some substantial allies in the region that have skin in this game. And in some ways, we should allow them to step up and play their role. We know for sure that Israel is quite concerned and would probably be willing and able to act independently if it got to nuclear breakout territory in Iran. But the Saudis have a pretty deep vested interest. And one of the key parts of this trip was supposedly applying some good traditional realism to American foreign policy in engaging the largest, most capable ally in the region to balance and deter the Iranians. And this focus can't just be on the nuclear program. It has to be on the leadership, and they're building a stronger balancing of power against Iran. That's what was lost when the Biden team minimized or sort of brushed aside the Abraham Accords approach.
So there's also, of course, the Saudi situation. Biden is heading to Saudi Arabia to advance U.S. interests there. Energy security, a huge part of this. But also a lot of conversation around how when Trump was in office, Jamal Khashoggi, human rights, that became the huge focus. And right now, Biden's going over to the Saudis to say, hey, can you pump some more oil? Is he going to address the Khashoggi issue? We'll get to that in a second. But first off, he says he will send a direct message of Saudi's peace and extraordinary opportunities. Watch this one.
And when I see the Saudi leadership tomorrow, I'll be carrying a direct message, of peace and extraordinary opportunities that a more stable and integrated region could bring to the region and, quite frankly, the whole world.
Now, there are some points of optimism here in the Saudi relationship with the U.S. ally Israel, right? Now you're going to have the Saudis allowing even more flights into Saudi airspace. They're moving toward total normalization of relations. But it's interesting because that really got going under Biden's predecessor, didn't it?
It did. And frankly, it's being driven by countries and leaders in the region. In some ways, that's a healthy development. People tried to say the Trump administration was isolationist or was bad towards alliances. It was quite the opposite. Having allies being willing, able to step up and shape their own regions and engage in collective self-defense and deterrence that minimizes the need for the United States to step in a time of emergency, that's good for the United States. It's good for the alliances, and it's good for those countries in the region. And it's really been this pathology that tries to drag us back into the grievances the Palestinians may have, or an overly narrow focus on a few issues. And when people want to talk about human rights, I don't really take any of them seriously if they're okay with a president engaging the leader of China, where there's an admitted international genocide, the crushing of Hong Kong, and threatening of neighbors by a nuclear power. If you don't talk about these issues with regard to engagement there, then there's got to be space in the engagement of Saudi Arabia to do real things to try to bottle up Iran and advance American interests without having to enter another war.
As Biden's overseas, he has also been speaking about the U.S. relationship with Ukraine and the Russian invasion of that country. Seems the Biden administration policy, well, he says out loud that it's whatever it takes, as long as it takes, to defeat Russia. We just sent them some more advanced long-range rocket systems. Where do you think that's going, Steve?
Well, sadly, it just seems to be in a long-term slow burn. And we just empirically, you have to acknowledge that the territory of Ukraine has been, there's a significant percentage that has been lost to Russia in this conflict so far. And there's no real terms on the table for that going another way. We also have become very out of balance in terms of Americans chipping in another $1 billion here, another $1 billion there. And the Europeans collectively are giving much, much less. And so we really need to get back to a healthier approach of pressing the Europeans to step up and take care of other Europeans, because apparently we have challenges in the Middle East that require attention that the president is highlighting. And there's been this long talk of a pivot to Asia that never seems to happen because we continue to provide a welfare safety net to Europeans.
Steve, thanks for the perspective and expertise. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Buck.
It's becoming increasingly obvious that the left is desperate to spin the inflation numbers report to make it look like they're actually fighting the 40-year high inflation rates, but Americans are smarter than that. We'll have that story coming up with the founder and executive director of Power of the Future, Daniel Turner. Let's talk about protecting your most valuable asset, your home. I don't know if you saw this, but there's a recent story about an Arizona real estate agent that found the home she lived in was listed for sale. Problem was, she wasn't selling her home. She was the victim of home title fraud, a devastating crime happening all over the country. According to the experts at Home Title Lock, the crime is incredibly profitable and hard to detect. An identity thief simply creates a fake title transfer for your home and refiles as a new owner. Then he can take out loans on your home or sell it. Typical identity theft services don't cover you, and neither does homeowners insurance. Home Title Lock does. Home Title Lock puts a barrier around your home's title. The instant they detect anyone tampering with it, they help shut it down. So go to HomeTitleLock.com, read the testimonials from government officials to tell you about this crime, and then take action. Register your address to see if you're already a victim and don't even know it. And when you protect your home, tell them Buck sent you to get 30 free days of protection. HomeTitleLock.com, HomeTitleLock.com.
I understand inflation is a real challenge to American families. I'm doing everything within my power by executive orders to bring down the price and address the Putin price hike. Putin's war is already hurting American families at the gas pump. From Putin's price hike in gasoline.
Putin invaded Ukraine.
Help deal with this Putin price hike. I'm doing everything in my power to blunt Putin's gas price hike.
The left is now desperate to spin the inflation numbers report to make it look like they're fighting the 40-year high inflation rates. And no one wants to hide this problem more than President Joe Biden. Here is Council of Economic Advisors Chairwoman Cecilia Rouse admitting that President Biden is relying on the Federal Reserve to fix his inflation problem.
You know, the president is giving the Federal Reserve the space it needs to do what it needs to do to control inflation. The Federal Reserve has the dual mandate of controlling prices while maintaining maximum employment. It is doing what it needs to do. Other presidents have tried to intervene in the Fed's actions. This president has said they're independent. He respects what they need to do. And part of what the Federal Reserve's actions will do, and we're already seeing it, is to cool off the housing market, which will find its way into helping with rent.
So it's obvious we need to fight these inflation rates, but if the president's not willing to do the work, well, who are we going to rely on to actually get the job done? Joining me now in studio, founder and executive director of Power of the Future, Daniel Turner. Daniel, man, thanks for being here.
Great to be here. Yeah.
So why are we seeing the inflation numbers that we're seeing right now?
I mean, so much of it is driven by really high energy prices, right? Everything that we consume, transport, eat, manufacture, it requires energy. And as energy prices have gone up, the price of those goods have gone up, and all of those prices ultimately get passed on to the consumer. So if one of the ways to tackle energy, besides the outrageous spending bills coming out of DC, the other way to really tackle inflation would be to do everything possible to drive down the price of energy, and that would ultimately drive down prices.
So talk to me for a second about the ways in which the Biden administration has made it harder for there to be energy fossil fuel energy production in this country. What are the things, the one that everyone points to, Keystone XL pipeline, canceling that, for example. Okay. That goes in the column. Mm-hmm. What else, though? What else have they done that has made it either more expensive or just more onerous from a regulatory perspective to do the refining as well as the exploration and bringing that gas up from the ground?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is an industry that requires a lot of government cooperation, right, because of just the nature of the industry. So Biden keeps talking about these 9,000 leases that we have. Great, we have those leases, but you need government permission to do exploratory drilling. And that's just one set of permissions. then you need another set of permissions to do actual drilling and extraction. And once you extract oil and gas, you don't have permission necessarily to transport it. That's another set of permissions. And all of these stages and all these steps require the government's cooperation, and all of them are being shut down by the Department of Interior, predominantly the Department of Interior. You add on top of that just land use access. So on Passover, on Good Friday, 20% of the land was made available when we have been given a promise of 100% of land leases. Deb Haaland, Secretary of Interior, only announced 20%. We've removed 1 million acres of land for oil and gas exploration in Alaska, 1 million acres in the Gulf of Mexico. And just this week, they're announcing we're moving more oil and gas leases from the Gulf and from the Atlantic. So again, they're sending all these signals to the industry saying, we're not going to let you produce oil and gas easily. And so the industry is responding in kind by producing less and prices going up.
So we know that the latest numbers, we got this from Fox Business, just reporting on it, 9.1% in June. So that's more of an acceleration than was expected. 40-year high, right? You put out this statement on how Biden is not fighting inflation properly. With inflation exploding at home, President Biden heads to Saudi Arabia hat in hand to beg for more oil. If he wants to stop his terrible inflation, Biden shouldn't be in Saudi Arabia begging for oil. He should be in America's Permian Basin telling energy workers he's going to get out of the way. Yeah, why doesn't he do that? I mean, if we're going to ask the Saudis to turn on more capacity, why isn't Biden trying? I have never heard this White House say, we want to expand oil production here at home.
No. That's a great point. He's never said anything like that. He's given these sophisms, I want to do everything possible to increase energy production, but he's never said, I want to see America produce more. So he's going to the Saudis, he's there right now. He's sent envoys to Venezuela and to the Iranians, right? So he understands we have a supply problem, but he's not interested in that supply coming from domestic producers. And just case in point, last week or 2 weeks ago, when the major CEOs of the energy industry were in DC, he refused to meet with them. Jennifer Granholm, Secretary of Energy, met with them, but the president made it, he was proud of the fact he wouldn't meet with them. So again, he doesn't want to cooperate with us, and we can't survive without cooperation from government.
So this White House wants to say that they're doing everything they can to deal with the energy crunch right now with the high price of gas. But they also think that the people that actually produce the gas are basically dirty and immoral.
He talks with more hostility towards the oil and gas industry in America than he does to the rest of the world, right? Than he does about our arch enemies. He has much more favorable opinions about Xi Jinping than he does about American fossil fuel industry. And that's telling.
Here is Representative Hakeem Jeffries, for example, was asked about Biden's high inflation numbers. It's interesting to see what a political challenge this is for Democrats. Watch this one.
And I think that President Biden has continued to lead in a way that has brought about a strong economic recovery from the standpoint of low unemployment, increased wages, and significant job growth. I believe 9 million jobs have been created under the presidency of Joe Biden. That's a record in American history. But issues remain, certainly as it relates to increased costs.
So you had Hakeem Jeffries there saying that Biden's done a good job in this economic recovery, and yet the American people disagree.
Yeah. Yeah, the polling all shows that they put this squarely in Joe Biden's hands. And the American people aren't falling for the fact that this administration has allowed them to go back to work and thought that that's job creation, right? So they don't believe the president's job numbers. They also don't believe that first montage you play. They don't believe the Putin price hike, the Putin price inflation. They don't believe it's COVID. They don't believe it's supply chain. They're putting the energy crisis at Joe Biden's hands because they remember the campaign when he said very clearly, he said to that girl, look at me in the eye. I'm going to tell you, I'm putting oil and gas out of business. They listen to him and they believe him. And that's what he said he was going to do, and he's doing it.
If the domestic oil producers had a White House that said, you know what, let's just do it. Let's drill, baby, drill. Let's go for it. What kind of additional capacity could be brought online? I know it would take time. It's not an overnight thing. But let's say within the next couple of years, what will we be looking at?
I mean, it took the president, the Trump administration, 2 solid years to get to true energy independence. We started celebrating it at the end of 18, beginning of 2019. So the industry takes a while to come online. But it did happen because the industry itself felt that they were getting the right signals from government that they were going to get out of the way. President Trump was incredible for this industry, but he didn't discover a new oil patch. We had no new technology that came about. The miracle of what President Trump did for oil and gas is he just let us do our darn jobs. And if this administration said, like, you guys are the experts, you do it responsibly, you do it better than anyone else in the world, go out and find oil and gas and bring us to market, we would. We would be bringing 2 or 3 million more barrels a day, and we would be back to $1.89 a gallon gas, like we saw under President Trump. We'd be back to $60 a barrel oil. You know, this industry wants to make its money off of volume. It doesn't want to make its money off of price. But the Biden administration believes in government. They don't believe in free markets.
Daniel, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
With the midterms approaching fast, even the far-left media outlets are starting to warn of a red wave on the way. We'll talk with Ryan Gruduski, author of They're Not Listening, when we return. Right now, I want to talk to you about a great deal from my friends at My Patriot Supply. If you needed more proof that we're going to have massive food shortages in the very near future, here it is. Many American farmers have announced that they don't have enough fertilizer because of global supply chain breakdowns. And as everybody knows, without fertilizer, you can't grow food. You can expect to see prolonged food shortages and sky-high prices for the next year at least. So what can you do to avoid this nightmare and protect your family? It's easy. Just visit preparewithbuck.com. At preparewithbuck.com, you'll find a special offer. Get $150 off a 3-month supply of long-term emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Don't skimp. Get one kit for each person in your family. Each My Patriot Supply kit has enough food for 3 solid months per person, providing more than 2,000 calories a day to keep your energy up. So go to preparewithbuck.com today and save $150 on each 3-month kit you require. More food shortages are coming. Go to preparewithbuck.com. Is there a red wave on the way? We know Biden's inflation is at an all-time high. We know his approval ratings are tanking. So will we start to see Democrat voters changing their minds in the upcoming midterm elections? Joining me now, someone who knows this stuff backwards and forwards, author of They're Not Listening, and also check out his national populist newsletter on Substack, Ryan Gruduski. Ryan, good to be with you, man.
Thank you for having me.
So you've got this great piece, The Long Shots, Which Republicans Can Win That We Least Expect. Walk us through some of this. Tell us, these are not the ones you're saying we're gonna win. These are ones you're saying in the piece, because of the trajectory of the GOP right now, because of the beginnings of the red wave, we could win. And some of them are really pretty surprising. So take us through some of them.
That's exactly right. So you have a lot of areas that Republicans are kind of cast out in New England, California, where Republicans could see some resurgence. So let's take in New England, you have Alan Fung in Rhode Island's 2nd Congressional. This is the western portion of Rhode Island. Alan Fung is a guy who's run for governor twice, lost, but he did very well in the western half of it. This is a district that's tracking right over time, and it could be the first time Republicans see a victory in Rhode Island in decades. Similarly, in New Hampshire's 2nd Congressional District, you have 36-year-old Mayor George Hansel, who is a mayor of a fairly large town in the region called Keene, New Hampshire. He won by a huge margin for his mayoral reelection, and he's running in a fairly Democratic area. But once again, this is an area that went Republican in 2010 for the 2010 red wave that they had there. There are overall 6 congressional seats in New England that are up for grabs for Republicans, 2 in Connecticut, 1 in Rhode Island, 2 in New Hampshire, and 1 in Maine. Those 2 being the long shots. In California, in the Central Valley, now people talk about the Hispanic moving towards Republicans, especially working class Hispanics. There's no better part of working class Hispanics than the Central Valley of California, which is 3 congressional districts, 2 which are represented currently by Democrats, 1 by a Republican. California's 9th congressional district, Republican Tom Patti, is making a bid to win one of those congressional seats. If he wins, it will also mean that Republicans carry the nearby 13th congressional district and the 22nd congressional district, which is currently held by Republican David Baldeo. Those are just some of the areas that people are looking. Similarly, in the Northwest, right now, Republicans just have 4 congressional seats, but there's 4 more that are vulnerable. Republican candidate Alec Scarlatos is running, and he is the subject of Clint Eastwood's movie 1517 to Paris. He's running
is he the guy who was on the bullet train who ran and grabbed the guy who had the AK-47 who was going to do the mass casualty terror attack? Is that's the guy?
Yeah, that's him. Yes, he ran for Congress 2 years ago. He did fairly well. He got in the mid-40s, didn't win. He's running now in an open seat. And in a Republican wave year, who knows? And if he wins, it means Republicans are probably picking up two or three more seats in the Pacific Northwest, which would be monumental, an area that Republicans really haven't won many seats in a very, very long time.
Now, if the Senate is going to come down to a couple of races, control of the Senate, Ryan, what are the races and how do you think the GOP is looking in them?
Well, there's five major races. New Hampshire, where the incumbent Republican, people have been saying New Hampshire is an easy Democrat win. However, the Democrat incumbent's popularity is in the high 30s. You have Georgia, which is Democrat held currently, Arizona, Nevada, and then Pennsylvania, which is a retiring Republican seat for Pat Toomey. Republicans are in a mixed shape. In Nevada, certainly they have a top-tier candidate, Adam Laxalt. In the other states, they didn't do amazing recruitment. However, in a wave year, that may not matter as much. Certainly, there's problems with the races in Georgia right now. Herschel Walker is not the strongest candidate. He's had many, many flubs, and his background is troublesome. However, he could still pull up an upset. If it is truly this astronomical wave where Republicans are going to pick up victories left, right, and center, then it's going to be the shocking victory will be Joe O'Dea in Colorado. Now, Colorado, once again, Republicans haven't won statewide for a presidential race since 2004. However, they have won in 2010 and in 2014, and the Democrat, Senator Bennett, when he ran in 2016, only got 50%. Against a much underfunded candidate who got 46%. Not a huge amount of money for a state that people consider to be completely blue. So if there's going to be a shocking victory, it will be Joe O'Dea in the Colorado Senate race.
And there's even been some talk in Democrat circles and some pieces in places like the New York Times, Ryan, I've seen on concerns about races in places like Oregon, in Washington State. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, Oregon's special this year because they have not only a Republican and Democrat, but an independent candidate, a former Democrat turned independent, running statewide for governor. The independent has received endorsements from prominent Democrats and prominent former Republicans from the state, liberal Republicans. So it's really up for grabs. Republicans have only won one statewide race in Oregon since 2000 and haven't won the governor's race since 1982. So Christine Drazen running for governor, she could be the first Republican governor in 40 years if she's able to pull off this upset.
Washington Post, by the way, released an article titled Trump's potential 2024 announcement could wreak havoc on the midterms. Ryan, play this one out for us a little bit. First off, is it believed now? I mean, I know with Trump, what's believed could change tomorrow because Trump changes his mind and who knows. But is it believed he'll likely, in your estimation, announce before the election? If he does, what do you think that does to the election? And what does it all look like?
You know, people were guessing he was going to announce on 4th of July weekend, which obviously came and went with no announcement. Is he going to announce for September when they're saying possibly? But once again, it's Donald Trump. I don't think that he is in any rush to announce. He is the presumptive. He's presumptively running already. He would have the absolute lead if he did run as of this point before debates happen or anything else. You know, who knows? But he's got tons of money, so he doesn't have to rush to win to run. I think a lot of Democrats are hoping he does because they'll make the entire election about Donald Trump again. But really, what's on voters' minds is Joe Biden. It was like the abortion comment. The abortion decision came and went, and Democrats didn't receive any long-lasting, real major bump in the polls. Neither did Joe Biden. Republicans' generic ballot fell a point, but it's slowly climbing back up again. I just don't think these are the major issues on voters' minds, especially with a recession likely coming in Q4 of this year, which would be near Election Day.
Even CNN is admitting the Democrats are going to face some real problems holding on to seats in the midterms. In a recent article they wrote, with President Biden's approval ratings falling to the lowest levels of his presidency, that traditional pattern threatens Democrats with sweeping losses in November's midterm elections. Ryan, a pickup of what in the House and a balance of what in the Senate in your mind is a red wave, the likes of which the Republicans should be proud of? What is hitting the number properly in your mind?
If they hit 235, that would be a very successful election night. It'll pick up 30 seats. It'll be great. If they win 250, it'll be a monumental, generational victory, the likes of which we really haven't seen Republicans hit that kind of a number. Anything more than that is just, you know, astronomical. But 235, I think, would be reasonable. 240 possible. 250 in a real big red wave, and anything more than that is just really cherries on the cake at that point. That means the Democrats will have really no functional power in Washington in the House, and they could even have defective Republicans, and it really won't matter.
Subscribe to Ryan Gruduski's National Populist Newsletter on Substack, folks, if you want to be really in the know going into this election. Ryan, thanks so much.
Thank you.
AOC admits she knows some more information about January 6th, apparently, and there's still been no Democrat that can tell us what a woman is, which is interesting. We got that and more coming up in Quick Hits. AOC has some interesting information she shares about January 6th, and there has still been no Democrat that can tell us what a woman is, at least publicly. So we got those stories in Quick Hits. Let's get to it. First of all, oh my, here we have AOC talking about Capitol Hill police. Now, if I were to say, although I think I have said this before, but if I were to say, it's very strange that there's video of Capitol Hill police officers waving on some of the rioters on January 6th, that's a conspiracy. I'm a conspiracy theorist. I'm a bad person for even bringing it up. But AOC is very upset about the fact that she believes there are, or the thought that she believes there are, insurrectionists among the Capitol Hill police officers who were, as she says, holding the doors open for them on January 6th and who were effectively the enablers of the insurrection. Here she is, member of Congress, freaking out about it. Watch.
These insurrectionists,
like Antifa,
and that there were actual officers working with this, and we never got to the bottom of that, and we never got any answers about that, and then to this day we're just supposed to pretend that that never happened.
What about Antifa?
I have no idea what happened to the people on the inside who were very clearly sympathetic with what was going on and opening the doors wide open for that.
So she's allowed to bring this up, of course, because she's a Democrat, but it does raise some questions, doesn't it? Why did members of Capitol Hill Police essentially wave on rioters that day? If this was really about security, securing the Capitol in the future, if this was about preventing something like that from happening again, wouldn't that be one of the first questions we would see answered? Wouldn't we have those Capitol Hill Police officers testifying about why they just moved the barricades out of the way and said, come on in? Seems kind of important, doesn't it? As to me. But then again, I also think it's important to be able to tell people what a woman is, which you think it's pretty straightforward, like this shouldn't be that hard. It appears that there are Democrats who are still totally unable to answer this. The president of the National Women's Law Center was asked, and this is what she said about the very complicated question, what is a woman?
Since you are the president of the National Women's Law Center, I was hoping that you could define what a woman is for us in this committee hearing.
That there are people who identify as non-binary. I think about 5% of young people.
We're not going to go there. I was hoping maybe you would. I was hoping that maybe you would say something that maybe we learned in high school biology that has to do with X and Y chromosomes, but which define male and female. But I guess we're not going to get there.
Nope, we are not. Not with these Democrats. And here is Kamala taking a page out of Biden's playbook with some. You just got to hear this one. Watch.
Together, we are expanding access to transportation. Seems like maybe it's a small issue, it's a big issue. You need to get to go and need to be able to get where you need to go to do the work and get home.
Whatever that means. All right, that's it for tonight's Hold the Line. No Spin News with Bill O'Reilly is next. Shields high.
Born from the tragedy of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has supported our nation's heroes and their families ever since. Heroes like Marine Corps Sergeant Adam Mayo. He served our nation for over 7 years before he was severely injured during training. He was left paralyzed from the chest down, severely limiting his ability to move around his home independently. Tunnel to Towers paid Sergeant Mayo's mortgage, removing a financial burden for him and his family. The foundation gave him a specially adapted smart home designed for his specific needs. Tunnel to Towers helps severely injured service members and first responders, as well as Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders. It has already come to the aid of so many heroes and their families by providing mortgage-free homes. The foundation is also committed to eradicating veteran homelessness. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at, like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.